Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is podcast episode number 116. I'm your host, Dr. Venkman, and joining us today on our podcast, we have Mazer.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Mazer, wow, that doesn't sound like you're very excited.
I'm recovering from the Black Plague, so.
I hate when the bubonic plague sweeps through town. It's just a terrible, terrible time.
I'm glad to have been upgraded to the bubonic plague from the Black Plague.
Ben P is joining us.
I am. I have no sickness to speak of, so thankful for that.
Good, good. Tiberius.
Hello.
How's it going, buddy?
Fabulous.
Well, doesn't sound like you're sick, so I think we're safe.
We are.
On the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
All right. Awesome. We're pretty mellow today, aren't we, guys? All right. also joining us is Mr. Traherne.
Oh, hey. Still thinking about the trailer, sorry.
The trailer. Yes.
We'll talk about that later, I'm sure.
We are going to talk about that later. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trailer is what we are referring to. Real quick, I'm going to go through some box office numbers here. Even though it's middle of the week, whatever, let's do it. Number one, The Hangover Part 2 brought in, you know, a nice chunk of change, $103 million. Not bad for opening weekend. Yes, you will see The Hangover Part 3 probably next year. I'm just throwing that out there. Number two, Kung Fu Panda Part 2 brought in $60.8 million. Number three, Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides brought in $50 million. Number four, Bridesmaids, $20.7 million. Number five, Thor, $12 million. So that's your top five for this past weekend. And we're going to talk about some of these movies in our review section. But first, we're going to play a little game called Connect 3 with Mazer. It's Mazer's turn.
Yes. So basically, I'm going to give you three clues, and you're going to have to guess what it is.
Don't die on us, Mazer.
It's just how my voice is. This is just how my voice is this week. Over the last couple weeks, actually.
There's a lot of bass there. A lot of
very
bass.
Smoky.
Yes. I was doing my best.
An album.
Yul Brynner earlier. You know, just quoting the Ten Commandments is pretty badass. all right. Here we go. Brad Pitt. Harvey Keitel. Michael Madsen.
True Romance.
Sin City.
Quentin Tarantino.
Wow. All strikes. Well, all strikes so far.
Huh.
Interesting.
Meet Joe Black.
Nope.
Meet Joe White.
Ooh, the terrible sequel.
All right, so far you guys are a little... Oh, it's a movie.
Sleeper.
Okay.
Oh, I was going to go with that poker show from ESPN.
Inglourious Basterds?
Nope.
Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel, Michael Madsen, and Brad Pitt.
It's not directed... Reservoir Dogs, right?
No. Nope.
Nope. Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
I didn't know if he
it's was... Ocean's 12.
It is directed by a very
California.
No, it's directed by a very famous director. He's done some very geeky movies, but this is not a geeky movie.
It's not Cool World, is it?
Nope.
Ooh. Robert Rodriguez probably is the guy.
Has he ever directed Brad Pitt in anything? I don't think so.
No.
The director is Ridley Scott.
The Mexican?
What the F is this movie?
Is that correct?
Ridley Scott?
Yes.
Alien Resurrection. Incorrect. Not directed by Ridley Scott, I don't think.
Oh, Troy, no.
Nope, that was Wolfgang Peterson.
That was
Peterson.
Wolfgang Peterson.
And where was Harvey Keitel in Troy?
He was hanging out with some greeks.
I feel like you've given us far too many hints for us not to have gotten this.
So the answer is Thelma and Louise.
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
and it's been forever since I've seen that movie.
Descent.
All right, good one. Good one. You
I stumped the panel. Here we go. Next question. Jude Law. Harrison Ford. And Rob Schneider.
What?
Bench warmers.
Jude Law and Harrison Ford are totally in that movie.
Steven Spielberg. He didn't direct The Animal?
One more clue. It's an actress.
Oh, okay. So
Rachel McAdams.
Boom.
Yeah.
Alan got it.
How?
Rachel McAdams with Rob Schneider in The Hot Chick.
Oh, jeez.
Harrison Ford in Morning Glory.
Yep.
And who was the third person?
Jude Law.
Oh.
And Sherlock Holmes.
I don't know that one.
I've never seen The Hot Chick, so.
Okay.
Nor have I.
He switches bodies with Rachel McAdams.
Yes. Yes, that's why I didn't see it.
The Freaky Friday formula.
Okay. We've got two left. All right. The Incredibles. Star Trek. And Lost.
The Incredible Star
Craig T. Nelson.
I'm surprised Ben hasn't got this one.
Well, I was thinking J.J. Abrams, but I don't think he had really had anything to do with The Incredibles. Is it
Star Trek and Lost?
Damon Lindelof?
Is it one of those writers, something?
You're on the track that it is. I mean, it's a person, right?
Yeah. Man,
vroom.
I'm not as familiar with The Incredibles as I should be.
Okay, here's the next clue. The person is not a writer or a director.
Ooh, okay, so.
So it's the actor or actress.
Who's in Star Trek.
Or producer.
Is it Leonard? No, never mind, sorry.
Space, the final frontier.
Okay, here's the next thing. The person is not an actor.
Ooh.
Oh.
What?
Wow.
Not a male actor or male or female?
Not an actor in any way.
An actor by trade.
Is it like an item that's in all three movies, maybe?
This is a person.
Oh, okay.
It is the person responsible for the score.
Oh, Michael Giacchino. Of course. Oops. Nice. I think that's the first music Connect 3 that we've had.
Yeah, I wanted to try up something new. Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Final one. Let's see how this one goes. Scarlett Johansson. David Bowie.
The Prestige.
Boom. Wow. Got
wow.
it.
Wow. All right.
My final clue was going to be Andy Serkis, but...
Ooh, man, yeah, those are some three elements that you do not instantly think of when you think of The Prestige, but
all right, well, that was Connect 3.
Nice.
Is that the good magic one?
Yes.
Yeah,
other
not
two.
The Illusionist was romantic, but not very
It was good.
It had its own merits.
Yeah, it had some great cinematography.
Yeah, it's just not a Chris Nolan movie, basically.
Yeah.
So. Cool. Nicely done, Mather.
All right. Yeah. Good job. Good job. All right. Let's talk about some movies. I'm sure some of us went to the movies this weekend. I saw Hangover 2 and Kung Fu Panda 2. So I think those are the only two big movies that came out. So let's talk about those. Let's start with Hangover Part 2.
Hey, everybody. Here's some fun facts. The population in Thailand is 63 million people. It is twice the size of Wyoming. None of you know Stu like I do. I can't even tell you what we've been through because we made a pact. What I can tell you is this. This is not Stu's first marriage. There was a whore in Las Vegas a couple of years
ago. All right, time's up. Time's up. You can sit down, bud. Come have a drink with me and the guys.
Go and do me a favor. Take my little brother Teddy with you.
That is a great idea. Bring the kid.
All right, one drink.
You did it, buddy.
Sure did.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
What the hell? I wanna see
you. Oh.
Your hair is gone.
No.
Oh.
I'm scared.
Sue, come on, get up. We gotta situate.
Holy.
Who saw The Hangover Part 2 besides me? I know Ben did.
I did.
And Tiberius.
Yep.
That's
and
it? Okay.
Mazur was deathly ill, so I don't think he made it out.
Yeah, I'll catch it again at some point. It's just,
oh, man.
Know.
Man, Mazur, I
slept, I think, like 14 hours straight at one point, so.
Wow.
Well, after you hear it, we have to say maybe you won't want to go see it. I don't know.
Maybe
well,
I'll just wait till it's on Netflix.
I was really hoping that you had seen it, Mazur, because I know it's going to be 2-on-1 here in this particular situation, and me, of course, being the one who didn't necessarily like it that much, and I know these other two guys really did like it. So, I don't know, why don't you guys go first and kind of, I don't know, each one of you maybe give some reasons why you liked it, and then I'll try to justify my own reasoning for not really caring for it.
Well, technically, The Hangover 2 was a carbon copy of the first movie. It's the exact same formula, no different, same characters, except they add a couple new characters in there. But in this film, they tried to outgross the first movie, I guess you could say. They tried to outdo the first movie in craziness. I laughed. I enjoyed watching the movie. There were moments that I just wish I could erase from my memory. I honestly don't need to see the movie again.
Yep.
It's
wow.
It was good. I enjoyed it for what it was, and I thought it had some very funny and great moments. But there's just stuff in there that I really don't need to see again.
Okay.
That might be true. I personally think it was probably one of the best comedies I've ever seen, and I'm serious. It's not because I love The Hangover. I love that type of humor. I don't know. I love every minute of this film.
I love The Hangover as well. I thought the first Hangover was pitch perfect, the best comedy of that year. This year, Bridesmaids takes the top spot for me so far. Bridesmaids was way funnier than The Hangover 2. And even people that have asked me, is like, should I go see Bridesmaids or The Hangover 2? I'm like, go see Bridesmaids because it's a much better film.
Okay, wow, all right. Well, then I think you and I are a little bit more on the same page than I thought, because I thought you were almost as kind of aligned with Tiberius's thoughts. But Tiberius, I know you're getting ready to say something.
Well, you know, don't get me wrong. I loved Bridesmaids. I really did. And, you know, I'm glad you saw it, Bankman, because it was really one of the better comedies I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy made that movie. Just like for me, Zach Galifianakis as Alan makes this movie. And as well as Mr. Chow, played by Ken Jeong, is amazingly hilarious and over the top in every aspect that he's on screen.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is the reason that I love this film. Let me elaborate a little bit more. Is because these three characters, the primary characters, are really truly, I don't know, it's just hard for me to explain. They are some of the best comic characters I've seen on screen.
Now, I love the characters. I do. I love the characters. And I enjoyed watching them up on screen. Unfortunately for me, it seems like I liked them more in the first film than I did in the sequel. For me, it seemed like it really seemed like they did just say, hey, let's, you know, we made a lot of money on the first film. Let's, you know, as much as they said that they weren't going to rush this out, this movie seemed like it was rushed. I thought the script was a little weak. Some of the characters weren't as strong as they were in the first, as they were in the first film. I just thought overall it was more of a lazy movie, I guess.
Yep.
That
was one of my complaints with it. I think, listen, like, this movie is clearly funny, and I think, obviously, as Tiberius indicates, there are people...
You're going to laugh. You were going to laugh.
Yeah,
it was a funny film.
Right, but, there are different, there are people out there who are probably listening to this right now that just found this absolutely hilarious, and I just didn't happen to be one of those people. Like, I'm sure there are people who... you know, saw Anchorman or something and didn't laugh as hard as I did and just kind of walked out going, like, I don't get it. I don't know what the big deal is. And that's kind of what I am with The Hangover and The Hangover Part 2, because I actually rewatched the first one right before seeing the second one, just because I hadn't seen the first one since the theaters. And I remember, you know, at the time just being like, okay, it was funny, but I don't really see like why people were, you know, fawning all over it and calling it like the greatest thing ever. So again, that's just like a level of kind of where I'm coming from on this thing. And I think there are definitely funny moments, as we've said, and Ken Jeong happens to be the most enjoyable part of this movie, I think. But Venkman, you said it's kind of lazy, and I think that's one of the movie's biggest flaws, is that the connections of how these characters get from point to point seem way less organic than they did the first time around.
Exactly, yes.
And there's a lot of different
That's true.
And, you know, again, like, I feel bad kind of, like, picking at this movie for plot details when it's supposed to be funny, and it is funny, but it's just not the type of funny that I personally enjoy as much as some other types of comedy. And I happen to agree with you also, Venkman, that Bridesmaids is the funniest comedy of the year so far, but... I think, you know, that's just like a personal preference type thing. The other thing that kind of bothered me about The Hangover Part 2, and you guys can let me know if you think I'm off base with this. I think they increase the scope and they increase the budget, obviously, and like everything feels a little bit bigger because they're in like a totally different country and all this stuff. And obviously all that is by design, but the stuff that happens to them is like more extreme. But I felt like the characters reacted the same way to this crazy stuff that they did to the stuff that happened to them the first time around, which really by comparison wasn't nearly as bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead.
You bring up a good point. To some aspect, you're right, I think. But like, Alan didn't really freak out and cry in the first one that I can recall. And I know that's a small point to bring up, but am I right or?
Oh, I see. Which part in The Hangover Part 2 are you referencing?
There's numerous parts in which Alan actually breaks down in tears. One, happening to find out when he finds out, or they think that, spoiler, they think that Ken Jeong's character, Mr. Chow, is dead. He begins to weep because they've become such good friends. Secondly, he also starts crying or whining, almost crying, when he finds out that Bradley Cooper's character is not going to be friends with him.
Oh, yes. You know? That's the scene that I was remembering. I knew there was one. I didn't remember the circumstances surrounding it. Yeah. I think you're right. And I think, like, the thing about Alan in this movie to me is he just seems so much more of a pathetic character. Like, I didn't find him as funny this time around because I just thought he was kind of sad. And if that's the point, then they definitely succeeded, you know, if that's what they were going for. But, like, he seemed a lot more obsessed with Phil in particular than the other characters, and even more than he did in the first film. And he was like really, really, you know, kind of striving for Phil's approval and stuff like that. But it was like they took it to such a point where it was almost embarrassing to watch. Like, you just kind of cringed at some of the things that he did and said, which I don't know. Is that the kind of stuff that you found kind of endearing and like what made it worth watching, Tiberius?
Well, I I always thought that there was that connection, or that Alan wanted to be Phil from the first one. It was pretty clear to me. And so I saw it in the first one, and then I saw it big time in this one. From the second that the door opens and we see there, we see Alan with longer hair trying to emulate Phil.
Yeah.
And by the, you know what I mean? And just the way that he acts towards him, and comments that are made later on in the film. I'll tell you what, we are really digging deep into this movie in terms of analyzing it for a comedy. But I really don't care, because I like this movie. And you need to see comedies like this in the theaters, I think. You need to see Bridesmaids in the theaters. Better yet, make it a comedy night or day and go see both. That's what I say.
Interesting.
All right.
The biggest example, I just wanted to point something out, and this is, can we jump into spoilers just for a second, or do you guys want to avoid that?
I don't mind jumping into spoilers.
Not going to bother me.
Okay.
So.
All right. So, Treharne, do you mind?
No.
Okay. All right.
Spoiling much anyway.
Well, yeah, the big thing that really kind of, you know, the example that I point to where I was saying that, like, these characters don't really react the same way, which is, like, where most of the comedy kind of derives from in the movie, I think, is, like, Stu discovers that he was basically raped by a transvestite, or, like, whatever he may have been consenting at the time. But, like, he finds out... in, like, the most graphic description and like, the photos that pop up at the very end of the, you know.
Not even at the very end. You don't even have to wait to the end, because it's right there. Like, I'll be completely honest with you guys. I've never seen a she-male until I saw this movie.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to see it.
Yeah, there's a lot of full frontal male transvestite nudity going on in this movie. But
just like you and me, Ben.
that's really disturbing.
They want to live.
Moving right past that, the way that Stu, you know, like, they kind of make a big deal of it just for a minute. Like, he kind of breaks down and is like, oh my god, whatever, and then they just move on and never really kind of come back to that, except for, like, an offhanded remark at the very end.
Yeah, they tease some stuff a little bit throughout the film, but
yeah, and that's, like, that's a life shattering event to me, you know, like, if that is like. You break down. I mean, for me, I would stop functioning as a human. Like, I don't care about Teddy. Like, the wedding is off. I'm done and rethinking my life and the choices that I've made. And, like, that is a game changer, I think. And they just kind of, like push on. And you could argue, like, from a plot standpoint, that they need to push on just because they're they're out of their element and stuff like that. And again,
well, Stu did have a little breakdown there, but he snapped out of it pretty quick.
And Phil talked him out of it. That's why he went on.
Phil talked him out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying, if I was Stu and you guys were Phil, you could not talk me out of that.
That's why this is not real.
Right. Yeah. I see what you're saying. What you're coming at. But I just think for purposes of comedy, like, there needs to be some sort of consistency with how these characters act. And some things they kind of freak out about, and other things they don't take as seriously, which in my opinion should have been taken more seriously. And you can still make comedy out of that. And they did, obviously, with this movie. But I just think, like, there needs to be some sort of answers. Like, there's some sort of accountability for these guys, because, like, in the first movie, right, spoilers for the end of the original Hangover, they're rewarded for their debauchery. Justin Bartha's character discovers $80,000 worth of Bellagio chips or whatever in his robe as they're driving home, and they're like, score, what up, like, we did all this crazy stuff and stole a police car and a tiger and all this crazy stuff, and then not only are we not punished, we're rewarded for this behavior. And then in this one, it's like the same type of thing happens, where, like, they destroy a bar in the middle of Thailand, and they're just like, it's completely on the ground, like, falling apart. People's lives have been potentially ruined. Like, there's no mention of any of that. Well, I don't really expect there to be, but also there's no accountability for their actions, which I guess it's just the whole thing about, like, living out a fantasy and, like, you don't want to see them go to jail because that's not funny, but I don't know. I'm sorry for pointing out all these little ridiculous things, but on a general level, I didn't find this movie nearly as endearing as Tiberius did. I will say, though, just to give some positivity onto this thing, that Ken Jeong was freaking hilarious in this thing. Like, he was kind of annoying, I thought, in the first movie. And it's very rare to me that you take the same character, give him a bigger role in another movie altogether, and then that turns out to be better. That would be like Jar Jar Binks in his own movie or something. You know, like having a bigger role, and you'd be like, oh, wow, this is actually really funny. But I don't know. That's kind of what that reminded me of. But I thought he did some really solid work there.
All right. Sounds good. Anybody else?
His own movie.
What?
Jar Jar Binks should be in Hangover 3.
Jar Jar Binks' own movie? Are you condoning this?
No, I'm no.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right.
Let's make that clear.
So who saw Kung Fu Panda 2?
I just was like, what? Yeah.
Home, I have received a message.
From the universe?
From the messenger.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Anybody? It's just me?
Not me. I think it was just you.
All right, well, yeah, I saw Kung Fu Panda 2, and I enjoyed it. So there you go.
How did it compare to the first one?
I think it's just as good. Wasn't any better, wasn't any worse. It was consistent, solid story, fun, action-packed animation. That was all good. It was a good movie. It was a good film, and the kids seemed to enjoy it as well. So if you're a fan of the first Kung Fu Panda movie, you'll like this one. I was just, you know, going into this, I just kind of had this fear that it would, you know, sequels usually aren't as good as the original film, and DreamWorks Animation kind of is known for, you know, kind of ruining their movies on their second film, but this actually turned out really good. I was really really happy with what they did. So
cool.
If you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend you check it out. Nice. I enjoyed it. So,
do you recommend seeing it in 3D, or does that really matter?
I didn't see it. I'm not gonna pay seven extra bucks to go see it in 3D. So
don't blame you. Good.
So okay. No, I'm not. If I don't have to see it in 3D, I'm not gonna see it in 3D.
Cool.
So yeah. Other than that, anybody else? Any other movies or anything? Or should we move on to some of the geek news topics stuff?
I saw Drive Angry today on DVD.
Drive Angry and, 3D?
Well, yeah, I don't have a 3D TV, but...
Oh, that's too bad.
I know, but it was actually better than I thought. It wasn't a bad DVD to watch. I'm glad I watched it. I don't know. Just wanted to throw that in there.
How was Nicolas Cage's performance in the levels of Nicolas Cage ridiculousness that we've come to see over the past few years?
He's really good at doing a stern face with no emotion and a blank stare while shooting. So I don't know. I definitely
sounds like Nick Cage. That sounds like something he'd do.
William Fichtner was the best, though. William Fichtner was the best character, my favorite. I really liked Amber Heard as well, mm-hmm. Believe it or not. So, you know, I thought it was pretty good.
Cool.
I will not believe it. Because Amber Heard can't act worth crap.
Oof.
Well, she was good at kicking ass. That was good, you know.
Okay, well, if she's good at kicking ass... Fine,
I don't know,
but
I know
she can't act. But alongside Nicolas Cage, maybe she's not that bad. So
exactly.
All right.
I think you're basing that assumption primarily off of the movie All the Boys Love Mandy Lane that we saw at Sundance this past year. Or, I'm sorry, at Comic-Con this past year, Venkman, is that right?
Well, that and The Informers.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But yes, that movie did play a big part.
Yeah.
In how I feel towards Amber Heard.
Gotcha.
At least she had a sex scene in The Informers, so.
Yeah, that matters. But at the end, she was all,
That's what happens with unprotected sex and drug use.
Only in the 80s.
He says, yeah. Tiberius says that so matter-of-factly.
All right.
Unprotected.
Okay, so let's just talk about a few things. First of all, I just wanted to just kind of talk about this. I think we were going to talk about this last week, but we didn't have time. But I kind of think we should, just kind of go into it here. The TV spots and film clips that studios are releasing for films these days, is it getting out of hand, or is it just me? I mean, Green Lantern and X-Men First Class have over 20 TV spots that have been released. That's 20.
Wow.
Is that too many?
I don't think they're even getting released on all the. I haven't even seen them all on TV. Just like a few of those.
Yeah.
And at this point, they all blend together. I mean, I cannot discern which one is which. I mean,
It's like, hey, have we posted this one yet? I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
What number is it? I don't know. It's like number 35. it's just crazy. I don't know.
There was seconds of new footage.
Yeah. Just like little snippets of clips. Hey, check it
out.
Oh,
you blinked? Oh, too bad.
I mean, do you guys what are your, let's go around the circle really quick and just say, like, what's your individual stance on, watching stuff like that, clips and TV spots before you see a movie? Like, what is your personal take on that? I don't know, Trehearne, let's start with you.
I'm not saying I'm against the whole thing of releasing clips, but I do not enjoy watching them because it does kind of give, it may not give away parts of the movie, but I don't like seeing the same scenes over and over again, especially if I think I might enjoy the film, like Green Lantern or X-Men First Class. So I've kind of tried to avoid any internet clips or anything like that, because I want to watch the movie as a whole. I don't need to see like 20 minutes of the first scene or some type of bullshit that they try to pull on.
Which is exactly what they did with Super 8, with J.J. Abrams' movie, where they released, 5 2-minute clips or something like that.
Yeah.
They show you the full first big train accident of the film. It's kind of like, okay.
And you go to the movies to be surprised and be excited and have suspense. If you know what's going to happen in the film based on these clips or whatever, why bother going to see the movie? I mean, like cameos and stuff, people always say, oh, so-and-so was seen filming for this movie in Los Angeles today. And you're like, oh, well, that would have been a really sweet cameo if I didn't read this article and now I know that he or she's in the film. Like The Dark Knight Rises, like I'm legitimately excited to see that movie, but I'm like, I would have been kind of surprised to see like all these little other background characters kind of popping up and being like, oh yeah, that's that guy, or this is, while I'm watching the film, I don't need to know about it a year and a half in advance.
Yeah. All right,
so, well, I'm trying to avoid all that too.
Okay, well, Mazer, what's your take?
For me, it really depends on the film. For Super 8, I'm not watching anything, but for certain things like the Green Lantern or X-Men First Class, like I feel like I already kind of know the mythos and things like that, so I don't feel like it's really spoiling it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so,
although I'm staying away from The Dark Knight Rises, so.
Yeah,
there we go.
So Venkman, you're kind of the same boat as Mazer then?
Well, I kind of have to watch everything anyway. So, I think that's why it bugs me.
Yeah.
Because, I post all this stuff, and so watching it, just having to watch it, it's just, I don't know. I like the old days where it was like, you know, one trailer, two TV spots, and one poster, you know?
Yeah.
Now it's three trailers. You got the teaser trailer. You've got the theatrical trailer. Sometimes, depending on the rating, a red band trailer. And then they usually release a second theatrical trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting up to 20 TV spots to watch.
Which is insane.
And, you know, depending on the movie, 5 to 15 film clips being released. And so it's just like, by the time I see the movie, I've seen half of the movie already.
Well, Tiberius,
it's just crazy.
Tiberius, do you think it's like, do you think it's necessary for the studios to do stuff like this? Or do you think it's like, why do you think they do it, you know?
I think it actually dilutes. I mean, for people like us, we read these and we post them and we watch them and stuff like that, because this is our job. This is what we do. But for the vast majority of audiences, I really think a lot of this is lost on them. I mean, it's not putting them down either. I just think that, honestly, people don't watch everything. I mean, people think, you know, people get confused over, oh, this is clip 9. I mean, who gives a flying F? You know, I mean, no offense, but they don't. They just, oh, this is kind of great. You know, I mean, if it's someone that's a rabid fan or someone that does this for,
and I think that's who they do it for, is for the rabid fans. I mean, it's like, let's feed the hardcore geeks what they want, you know? Let's put in 2 seconds of a new clip in this TV spot, and they'll be drooling over it, mm-hmm. you know? Like,
yeah, it doesn't bother me. I agree with everything Mazur said and you know, Trahern. Everyone said some great points. And the fact is, on movies that I really am excited for, I will often not pay attention to them. I look at what I need to look at to properly post this and properly give my thoughts on something on Geek Tyrant. Mm-hmm. I always will. But the point of the matter is, as a whole, in terms of me completely entering it into my mind as permanent knowledge, no. Because I want to kind of have that element of surprise. I want to be excited when I go to a movie. And I will anyway. I'm an easy person to enjoy a movie, but...
Right.
You know, I don't think these film clips are necessary. It doesn't matter to me.
It's not. Then they aren't necessary. But that's just just the studio thinks they're necessary.
That's cool, though, Tiberius, that you can actually like watch, you know, if not the whole thing, at least a majority of it, and then just kind of like do what you need to do, and then essentially recycle it from your mind. Because I don't have that ability. Like, once I see something, I'm the kind of person who, once I see it, when I'm watching the movie, I'm waiting for that moment to happen every single time. And then when it doesn't happen, like notable.
That's what's funny, too, is sometimes they put in the trailer something that isn't even in the movie.
Yeah, and like the most notable example of that to me is The Transporter, the Jason Statham movie. At one point in that trailer, if you go back and watch it, he deflects a missile with a silver platter. And I was like, holy crap, that looks amazing. And that moment never happens in the movie. And I actually, you know, I was much younger back then, but I went and tried to complain to the theater the manager afterwards, and I was like, listen, this is false advertising. Like, this didn't happen. I want my money back.
Are you serious?
And they're like, no. And I'm like, yeah, I figured that would happen, but I had
to
try.
Good for you, Ben. So, good for you.
No, but in all seriousness, I think... What's that?
You slammed your ticket stub down in anger.
Yeah. In all seriousness, I think, like, you know, for me... The way that I kind of approach this stuff is, luckily, I don't write up nearly as many of these things as you guys do, because I'm, you know, trying to do other, you know, I'm like busy working my part-time job and stuff. But anyway, I think the way that I approach this stuff now is like, I'll watch something until I'm convinced that I want to see it in theaters, and then I'll just stop. I'll just cut it off. So for something like Super 8, the people alone, and I watched, I think, like the first Super Bowl teaser or something, and that's it. And that's all I need to see. Dark Knight Rises, I'm not watching a single second of anything that comes out for that movie before I sit down in theaters. Like, I know for a fact these movies are things that I want to see. Something like Green Lantern, actually, that we've talked about a bunch of times, that one I've been a little bit more curious about. So I've actually watched a lot of the stuff for that movie, trying to be convinced and swayed one way or the other to let me know what this movie is actually going to be, because I feel like that particular marketing campaign has been kind of weird, where like they'll release a really good trailer and then one that's kind of crappy and then another one that's like pretty good again and then another one that's like, wait, what kind of movie is this going to be? So you're really just like, I don't know, for that one, that seems as like kind of an outlier as far as examples go, but that's my kind of take on the whole thing. Right. You know, I just watch it until I'm convinced.
But that takes away the excitement of walking into the theaters and like, you know, 50-50 chance that this movie's either going to be awesome or it's going to suck.
I know, well, seriously.
Back in the Red Riding Hood, like I went and saw Red Riding Hood this year and I was like, okay, it looked pretty cool and, you know, whatever. So I just went in and watched it and I was like, okay, this is pretty shitty. But, you know, I didn't know walking in. So it was kind of like, oh, this may be great or this may be crappy. But you know, I kind of live off that feeling, I guess. Maybe it's just me.
But like the back in the days when movies were $5 or like $5.50, then yeah, I would totally be with you. But now, I mean, it's like $10-$12 for like normal movie prices, and it's like I can't.
Back in the day, $5.50. Like what? When were you born? Because I think you're younger than I am.
I am. Yeah. Like well, to be fair, I didn't grow up in Los Angeles. We're
living. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. LA is different. Has a different price.
Yeah, back in Florida,
cowtown.
In Florida, in the mid-90s, movies.
No, I know what you mean. I know it exactly. I've paid those prices before.
Yeah.
And then there was that place, that $2 theater where you could watch movies from 3 months ago.
Yeah.
In the theater.
But I think, like,
I miss the dollar theaters.
You know, when movies were cost that little to see, then Traherne, I'm totally down with that. Like going in with that kind of roll the dice feeling of like, I have no idea. And there's an excitement in that, like not really knowing. But when movies are so expensive, I can't justify, you know, paying $15 for that feeling when there's a 50-50 shot or maybe sometimes more that the movie's going to be disappointing.
That's how I get my jollies, man. $10 on the line.
All right.
I wonder if there's an opportunity for directors and producers to create marketing the materials that aren't really related to the story. I'm just remembering like AI, not a good example of a movie that did well, but it only had kind of a title effect and they didn't have a single piece of the film that you could watch until after the movie came out is when they actually released a trailer that you could see any of the movie in it.
Huh.
So most people actually went to the film not knowing a single thing about the film other than it's got like Spielberg and directed by Haley Joel Osment. Yeah. So,
yeah. I think, you know, it kind of another example of something similar to that, you know, I was talking about like moments where you would see things in the trailer that didn't actually happen in the movie. The biggest example of, them kind of taking that to the extreme is Anchorman, I think, because if I don't know if you guys remember some of those trailers, but like Ron Burgundy would have like a full beard and like a guitar on his back and dressed like a hippie, like wandering through the streets. There's like all kinds of crazy footage that never was intended to be in the movie, but they marketed it that way on purpose just to kind of build up these ridiculous expectations, I think. So
yeah, and kind of preserve the laughs.
Yeah, right? Totally. And I think that's the way to do it if you are going to do it at all, you know, as far as like making crazy amounts of trailers with new TV spots and all that. Yeah, if you can, if you have a little bit of extra money, go ahead and shoot, you know, like people have made careers out of doing that. Ask Jason Eisner. He made the trailer for Hobo with a Shotgun, which is not a real movie until they, you know, it got turned into one basically. So you can easily take a couple extra bucks on the side of a big, you know, $100 million budget movie, $50 million budget movie, and shoot 2 second clips here and there and piece it into a TV spot. You know, and not really piss off a lot of people if you do it correctly, I think.
Or something I've always wanted to see where, is that the trailer is actually just the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Acceptable.
It's enough to go, wait, what is this? And then it goes, boom, done. It's released on this date. And any clips from it would just be within those first, maybe even 5 minutes of the film.
Yeah, well, I think
like
I'm
the first 2 minutes of E.T. or something.
I think I'm more on board with like the latter part of that statement, where like, if you're going to show clips from a movie and make trailers and stuff, ideally do it from the first 20 minutes or something. So then after all those moments are gone, then you're still in pure surprise for the entire rest of the film, basically. Like, that's what I would love in kind of a perfect world. But.
Yeah, like when they show like the final battle in the trailer, like the final battle of the movie, you're like, oh, so he does survive everything till the end.
My favorite trailers are always the ones I'd really rather see, like, where they're up close on a shot, like, say it's a murder mystery or whatever, and then the shot, the camera pulls back and very slowly with cool music, and then there's a title at the end saying when the movie's coming out, and that's it. You're like, whoa, you know, I like those kind of shots better.
I just remembered Buried.
Mm-hmm.
Did that.
There you go. There you go.
That was a really good example. Yeah.
I really liked Buried.
Totally. Yeah.
All right, cool. Have you guys seen the, I'm sure you've all seen it by now, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trailer, the David Fincher one?
Yes.
Yep.
I don't know about you guys. Have you seen the original movies?
I saw the first.
Okay.
Did you say, Tiberius?
I've seen all three. I actually saw the first two in theaters and the last one on DVD.
Okay.
Now I enjoyed the films that were made, the Swedish films that were made. I thought they were pretty solid. But after watching David Fincher's trailer, just looks like it's going to be a pretty superior film to the ones that they made, to the ones that were already made. I don't know how the rest of you feel. What do you guys think?
What'd you think
about what you saw?
The little amount that I saw, I can tell you right now that there's going to be a lot of aspects and a lot of scenes that are all, and I think that are a lot of scenes that are very, shot for shot in a lot of aspects, almost completely redos of the original films.
Yeah,
but the key thing to remember, though, this is technically not a remake. Yes, it's a remake in the fact that David Fincher is doing it now so close to that, and they already did this movie, so that's to an extent. But I want to point out, though, this is technically David Fincher adapting from Steve Larson's Millennium Trilogy.
Yeah, so, exactly. But a lot of people don't see it like that. People see it as...
Well, I think we have to wait till the movie comes out. I mean, seriously, a David Fincher shot is a David Fincher shot. So I think saying there's even going to be a shot-for-shot copying, I think there's going to be possibly some angles that might be copied, but I think it's going to be in a different presentation. The music is going to be phenomenal as well. So.
Yeah, the music in the trailer is awesome.
The music, yeah, that's true. I wasn't taking into consideration the exact... It's not. I shouldn't have said it that way. You're right. You're right, Mazur. Not exactly shot for shot, but in terms of basically telling the exact same type of scenes, but with David Fincher's perspective. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of similarities to what Matt Reeves just did with Let Me In. You know, like the Let the Right One In kind of adaptation. That's not necessarily a remake of that movie, but it is kind of his own adaptation of the source material book.
Yeah.
And Matt Reeves threw a lot of style into Let Me In that wasn't necessarily present in the original Swedish film. And I think clearly that's what we see just with, and you know, this is only a teaser we need to remember for this Fincher thing. And it is like a kind of, I mean, on one level, I'm kind of interested in it, as a trailer, but on the other, I'm kind of like, this is fairly amateurish. You know, if you take a step back and look at it, it's just cutting to the beat, but because the music is so good and because Fincher's visuals are always kind of outstanding, it makes it a lot more interesting than it would have been, you know, with any other movie. So, as far as like, you know, if we're going to talk about it being the best trailer of the year or something, like maybe it's evocative, but like technically speaking, I don't know if it's like a great trailer. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I've seen a lot of people like throwing some hardcore praise onto this trailer, and it's like, yeah, it's good and it does its job as a teaser, but like anybody with any sort of editing software could have made this. You know, there's not really a lot of talent in crafting that particular trailer. But that being said, I do think, you know, we just need... Oh, go ahead, Tiberius.
Wow, those are, you know, just you did say that people are praising it very highly and throwing out some heavy words, but saying it's not a there's no creativity in that trailer, I would completely disagree. Yes, it's a teaser. Yes, we're only seeing bits of it. Yes, it might have been easy, very, very easy to edit together. But the fact of the substance of it, what's in the shots that we've seen, is amazing. It's Fincher. It's amazing.
Yeah, maybe the reason that I said that was because I have seen the original movie, and it does look like just a collection of moments that we've already seen in that film. So that's probably a large portion of...
And actually, that's actually what I should have said instead of shot for shot. It is a collection of moments. You're very right. But I highly recommend you take a look at the second film as well, and even the third film, even though it wasn't my favorite of the original films.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's key to bring up, now even though we only have seen small bits, I think it's key to bring up Rooney Mara as playing Lisbeth Salander, even though very limited we've seen, but from the poster, which we also shared today on the site,
mm-hmm.
The international poster, that is, and this the trailer that we've seen, I think...
She's going to be a big star after this movie comes
exactly,
out.
Exactly. I don't know. I'm sold as her, as Lisbeth Salander. Noomi Rapace did a phenomenal job. She embodied that character.
It launched her career, didn't it? This is going to launch Noomi, Rooney Mara's career. I mean, her biggest role was in Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake, which I didn't really care for. Then she showed she had some pretty good acting chops in the Social Network, but it looks like she's gonna probably blow some people away in this movie.
Just
as an actress, should be interesting.
Just a question: how many of you guys read the books?
No.
Not me.
Tiberius?
No, I haven't. I haven't read the books.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Have you? No,
my wife did. She read all the books, and she did watch all the movies, and she actually said the movies are dull compared to the books.
That's I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from people.
So
that have read the books.
She said a Fincher adaptation is probably actually going to bring a lot more energy to it. So
yeah, and I think the biggest kind of critique of the original Swedish trilogy was that it was directed by a guy who was known primarily for TV work, so the movies kind of feel like made-for-TV films. And I think if absolutely nothing else, we can say just from this teaser trailer alone, we know that that's not going to be the case for Fincher's version.
Yeah. The other thing we wanted to talk about is just, I'm sure you've all heard about the Old Spice guy, Isaiah Mustafa. Is that how you pronounce his last name, Mustafa?
I believe so, yeah.
Just whenever I hear that name, I think of Mufasa from The Lion King.
I do too. You're not alone.
If anyone was,
so I'm not the only one.
If anyone was Mustafa, I think he would be Mustafa.
Right? So. So anyway, as you know, he's currently trying to sell himself to Marvel as the actor who should portray Luke Cage in the movie when they eventually get around to making it. He recently did a pretty cool fan-made trailer, Luke Cage teaser trailer, just to kind of show what he's got, show what he would look like, you know, just give a visual presentation of what he'd look like as Luke Cage. And I think it turned out pretty well. So if you haven't seen that yet, definitely go on the site and check it out. Just go in the search section and type in Luke Cage fan film, and it should pop up.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of what Tom Jane did for Jonah Hex. Do you guys remember?
Yep, I do.
Yeah.
It didn't help him, though.
Yeah, no.
Well, that movie wasn't very good. So he kind of dodged the bullet.
Yeah, he dodged the bullet on that one.
Yeah, with the video, I mean, it's cool, and it's like, okay, and it's like, it wasn't really that much of a leap to imagine you looking like Luke Cage. The only thing it would be great is, like, if he released another video where it was, like, a little more insight into his insights of Luke Cage and what he could do to break into the character emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause right now, I mean, looking the part is only part of it, right?
Yeah, it's just like a series of cool shots, basically, at this point. But, yeah, I agree.
He's going to be starring in Horrible Bosses, I believe, one of the other big comedies opening up this summer. So we'll get to get an idea, hopefully, maybe a little bit of his acting ability, even a little bit more than the Old Spice commercials. Oh. So,
yeah. Well, he was on Chuck, and he was almost the same character. So I just wanted to see, you know, give us some range.
Yep.
Cool. That'll be interesting to see what he does with that. Other than that, we've got X-Men First Class coming out this week. Very excited to see this movie. The reviews have been coming out have all been positive. I haven't really seen anything negative said yet. So, I mean, that's a good sign. I think X-Men has been reinvented, rebooted. Something the fans are going to like. So that's cool. It's something to look forward to.
They're already talking sequel, correct?
Oh, yeah. They're already talking about the sequel. So,
man.
Yeah. I can't wait to see this movie. I'm very excited about it. So
I'll definitely
be checking it out this weekend.
I'm not legally allowed to say anything, but I did see this last night. And since I can't say anything about it, I'll just say a sequel would be awesome.
All right. there you go.
Yeah.
Other than that, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can go to our shop, geektyrant.me, where you can pick up some t-shirts, sunglasses. We got free shipping right now, so you might want to check that out, pick something up. Comic-Con's coming up, so you might want to grab a t-shirt. Just for that, because you can. Don't forget to head on over to Facebook, facebook.com/geektyrantfans, and like us. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/geektyrant, and subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/geektyrant, where we currently have a video blog rants.
We've missed a few weeks, but it's just because I've been sick. So
yeah.
Hopefully I can get a new version up. Or, I mean, new episode. Sorry. Yes.
Other than that, I think we're good. I did buy a pair of shoes. For those of you that stayed around onto the very end last week.
The cliffhanger is answered.
I bought the Reebok Reflex shoes, and they are amazing. Highly recommend. I tried on the new Nike Free.
Yes.
They aren't the same. They changed them. They did not feel like the same shoe that I've been wearing the last few years. They recently changed their design. They're a little bit more bulky now, and they didn't have the same feel to it. So I kind of was like, I don't know. And then I tried on those Reebok Flex, and I'm like, I'm sold. Been wearing them for a few days now, and they are awesome.
Nice.
I think so you should start a shoe podcast.
It would be one episode a year when I buy my new shoe.
There you go. Just chronicling your decision process, and then like maybe the first few weeks of like, oh, today I played some basketball. It worked out pretty well.
Other than that, we're going to go ahead and end this podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming to the site. We appreciate it.
Oh, we should.
What? Did I miss something? I did.
You did.
I did. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
What?
Man. You got to plug your stuff, man.
Oh.
I forgot.
No big deal.
Go for it, guys.
Tiberius, go for it.
Well, not only can you hear me on this wonderful podcast, you can hear me on the Napier's Newscast, also available on Geek Tyrant. I haven't posted the newest episode this week yet, but we will.
Nice. And you can find me at the Not Just New Movies podcast as well, and that too is available at geektyrant.com, so check it out.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks for coming to the site and reading the stuff that we put up for you guys. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Take care.